could you please take your seats? We're about to begin.
Trying not to.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing, hon?
You were nice, Kirby.
Yeah.
Dan's ribs are hurt. My back is hurt.
It's like,
what
kind of
Well, good morning, everyone. I call to order the Palm Beach Metropolitan Planning Organization. Today is Thursday, May 15th, 2014. The time is about 9:02, and our first item is roll call.
Commissioner Ballaget?
Here.
Commissioner Berger?
Here.
Commissioner San Maria?
Here.
Vice Mayor Burdick?
Here.
Mayor Taylor?
Here.
Mayor Wilson? Chair Haney?
Here.
Deputy Mayor Scott?
Here.
Commissioner Fitzpatrick? Mayor Glickstein? Councilmember Harrison?
Here.
Mayor Triola?
Here.
Vice Mayor Javlin?
Here.
Councilmember Davis?
Here.
Commissioner James?
Here.
Commissioner Opel? Commissioner Materia?
Here.
Councilman Wilhite?
Here.
Mayor Ferrari?
Thank you very much. Commissioner James is going to offer our invocation, if you'll please rise.
Heavenly Father, we thank you for this day that you blessed us to wake up and witness. We ask that you look over the members of this body, give us wisdom, give us discernment as we make the decisions with which we are confronted. In your Son's name we pray.
Amen.
Of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Members, before us we have the agenda for today. Nick, are there any changes or amendments?
No, Madam Chair.
Second.
Motion by Taylor, second by Burdick to approve. All in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Thanks. Our next are the minutes of April 17th, 2014. Are there any changes, corrections, additions?
Move approval.
Motion by Harrison, second by Taylor to approve as presented. Berger, sorry. All those in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, like saying thanks. Comments from the chair. I'll be brief. We have a long agenda. I talked to Nick about that long agenda. And I think the way we've been organizing our items to have our action items in the beginning in case members do have to leave and to have our discussion items at the end, I think is working out well. I hope everyone agrees. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things going on right now, which is why we do have a long agenda, and we're here to do business. Yes, Commissioner Matera, did you have a question? Oh. Okay, and welcome Commissioner Fitzpatrick. Executive Director's Report, Nick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, I wanted to point out that this meeting marks my one-year anniversary with the MPO. So,
congratulations.
Yeah, I survived a year. And I do want to thank everyone for allowing me the opportunity to work with you thus far and to say that I'm looking forward to all the things that the future holds in store for this organization and for this county. So thank you very much. Second, I do want to apologize for the length of today's agenda. I've been corrected already on that point. Just want to point out that all three of our major planning documents, our components of them are all on the agenda today. The long-range plan, the short-range funding document, our transportation improvement program, which is we call it the TIP, and then the unified planning work program, the document that tells me what my organization should be working on over the next 2 years. So that's part of the explanation, but I will work to reduce at least the volume of backup material provided to you. And because of the length of the agenda, I'm going to conclude my report there.
Great. Thank you so much, Nick. All right, we will move on now to the consent agenda. Are there any members that would like to discuss any items on the consent agenda?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
H5.
Yes.
There were changes to the Bicycle and Greenway and Pedestrian Advisory Committee.
Louder. I can't hear. I think the microphone. Thank you.
There were changes made to the Bicycle Greenway and Pedestrian Advisory Committee bylaws. Can you briefly explain what those changes were?
Sure. And really, this is a housekeeping item We didn't have adopted bylaws for this committee when I came on board, so these are not really modifications. This is the introduction of new bylaws for the committee, and they mirror the bylaws that this board has approved for the technical and the Citizens Advisory Committee, with one notable exception. I want to make sure you understand how the committee membership is structured for those two other bodies. The Technical Advisory Committee is structured to allow agencies to have representation on that group. The Citizens Advisory Committee is structured to allow each of the MPO board members to appoint one representative to that committee to represent the citizens of your constituent base. So the Bicycle Committee, which is your third advisory committee, is structured more like the Technical Committee in that it allows agencies to be represented and then allows you the opportunity to approve individuals who will represent those agencies.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions on the consent agenda? Seeing.
Second.
Okay, we have an approval by Taylor, a second by Burdick on the consent agenda. Further discussion? All those in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Thank you. And we will move to our general public comment period of our meeting. And we have a few cards. And I'll call you each forward, and you'll have 3 minutes to speak to us. Our first individual is David London. Welcome, David.
Welcome. Good morning. David London, West Palm Beach. As you know, I have an interest in air pollution, particularly when I have to breathe pollution. In the context of what I want to briefly read is, back around 1980, a gentleman from Fort Myers, Lee Rogers, got nationwide publicity, the UPI article about he having perfected a car that ran on compressed air. I subsequently talked to a congressman, I think Lee Nichols, number of years later, who rode in that vehicle. Subsequently, many years later, I met someone who was on his support team at a conference, and he told me that the reason it didn't get on the market is the part he needed was owned by another company, and they refused to supply it. And then subsequently, I found out that the SEC has refused to allow them to raise any money, not that he was doing anything illegal. So we have a gentleman in Florida 35 years ago, among other many other people, who really perfected a kind of a technology that would eliminate pollution. Now, on a positive side, Peugeot has announced within the past year Peugeot to launch a new hybrid air car that runs on air in 2015. They're all set to sell the first air-powered hybrid car from next year with the new hybrid air engine, the first to combine petrol compressed air. The firm says that the car could reduce petrol bills by 80% when driven in cities. The system works by using a normal internal combustion engine, special hydraulics, and adapted gearbox, along with compressed air cylinders that store and release energy. This enables it to run on petrol or air or a combination of the two, and basically that it perhaps 80% of the time it could run on compressed air. And the air compression system can reuse all the energy normally lost when slowing down and braking. The motor and the pump are in the engine bay fed by a compressed air tank underneath the car running parallel to the exhaust. Anyway, I can go on. It's an article that you can hear when you go into World Industrial Reporter or just look on the pipe, Peugeot to launch the new hybrid air car. A lot of implications, a lot of things you could think about what this group or you individually as city commissioners, council members might want to do to promote this, try to obtain this. Supposedly, it'll be on the market in the next few years, but, you know, things happen. So anyway, thank you.
Thank you, David. Interesting information. We appreciate you coming forward. Ann Kuehl.
Good morning.
Welcome.
I just have a couple of issues that I wanted to bring to your attention. The first one I'd like to talk about is the All Aboard Florida. I'm very opposed to the All Aboard Florida project. The project is basically, I believe, to increase the track capacity for freight. There have been documents that from other agencies that. Transportation agencies that said that it's going to double the track capacity for the FEC lines. And my concern is that the grant money that or the loan money that's used for this, that's government loans, since it is FECI that is applying for those, that they're a separate corporation from FEC. And once the track improvements are done, if the transportation part of the project fails, then will those people, will that money ever be repaid? My concern is that that will be the tracks will be in place and the paid for the freight improvements, and maybe that's the purpose of this. And also, the money could have been used for bridge and road improvements. And if that money is lost, then we will have the failed transportation and no bridge and road improvements. The other thing I wanted to mention was the plans for using acreage roads to accommodate bigger developments like Minto West, Avenir, possible GL Homes development. We do not want to, our private roads carved up to accommodate a future development. They need to accommodate us. We do not want to be dissected and major roads pass through our development at our expense. We view the area as a wonderful place, and it is our choice to live there. And just because outside influences decide that it's not the way it should be, that we do not want to have that happen to our community. So my purpose for coming here is to bring those items to your attention. The other one that I would like to mention is the overpass on North Lake. The first draft of that was taking away the automatic turn lane that goes to the, I think it's the southeast, towards the east, and have a flyover, and that you would have to add a bunch of trips, a bunch of intersection stops to get to back onto to the B-line. And that, to me, was troublesome, and I understand that you're thinking about stopping that overpass, and I would be glad that if you would just stop the overpass, because it's meant to steer us to go east and then have to make several stops. It's going to add trips or add time to our trips to the east. So I would strongly oppose the overpass being implemented. That's all I have. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for coming forward. We appreciate your comments. Alexandria Larson.
May I comment to
Sure. Yes, Commissioner.
Yeah, I'd like to follow up on one of the items that Ms. Kuhl mentioned, and that is I'm talking now in general. I think the MPO should be sensitive to the character and quality of life. I think Commissioner Jablin also brought it up at the previous meeting that. We have to be sensitive to the character and quality of life that a community exists for a certain lifestyle. And people move in to a community because of that lifestyle. And there are people who have lived 10, 20, 30, 40 years in a rural community. And then you have a developer from out of town who comes crashing in and decides I'm going to change their lifestyle, and sometimes we're insensitive to that, and it really destroys the motivation that people moved into an area. So we have to be very sensitive that you don't just cut through in the middle of a existing community for 30, 40, 50 years and completely change. And in this case, you are accommodating new people at the expense of people who have lived in that community for, like I just said earlier, 10, 20, 30, 40 years. And that's something that we in the MPO should give serious thought to. And I supported Commissioner Jablin in that idea with respect to the proposal that came up with respect to their northern community. And that's something that we as an MPO have an obligation to be very sensitive to and be careful of not destroying the character and lifestyle of, you know, old communities. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Yes, Commissioner Balaji.
I just wanted to make sure that we don't start engaging in mission creep because, you know, what we're doing here is talking about transportation, not about approval of large developments. We'll have a venue for that, obviously, over the next few months. And, you know, here I think we should be more concentrated on
I am concentrating on transportation. It is
right,
in fact,
but not quality of life, and you know those are things that the transportation are related
issue,
to it.
The transportation issue is the main issue when you cut
well,
through
we'll
the
see.
Mid.
Well, you know,
that
mean,
is
you
that
know,
is that is what I want. That's exactly what I'm talking about: transportation and roads.
Right?
Aren't roads transportation?
Yeah, but I think we're much more. We should be much more technical here, and not. You
know. I don't know how much more technical I can be. I'm talking of roads cutting through quiet neighborhoods.
I'll defer to you. I agree with you.
That is exactly what I'm talking about. Roads, isn't roads and transportation one and the same?
All right, and the truth is that we have been sensitive with the urban interchange issue.
Yes.
This board has supported the communities. Consistently over that issue. So, Alexandria Larson, welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
I haven't been here in a few years,
yeah,
so thanks.
Welcome.
I'm going to hit three items, and I'll try to do it quickly because I have to go to the South Florida Water Management District right after this meeting, right now. Thanks for stopping the overpasses on Okeechobee Boulevard. I think you should stop the overpass at Beeline and North Lake Boulevard. I think these overpasses, we cannot do this. This changes quality of life, especially in the gardens. You put that overpass in, and somebody with a gazillion-dollar house is going to be really ticked off. Indian Trail Improvement District, Commissioner Valachet, I will point out to you that on your long-term, this body's long-term transportation plan for 2040, Indian Trail's privately owned roads, which we pay for to grade and pave and do whatever, we're a little different in the acreage, are on your long-term plans, 2040. That's what's got us concerned, because you wouldn't want somebody building a highway in front of your house. I say this in front of the commission also, but Indian Trail Improvement District did a presentation last night that greatly changes my quality of life. I've been out there for 20 years. My girlfriend's been out there for 40 years. The changes that are going to come in our way to accommodate a hole in the donut is not a good plan. It doesn't work. It wasn't ever meant to be. And that's, you know, you have main roads. Somebody did point out that certain areas in the county you could accommodate things because there was a major highway somewhere in the world. We do not have that in our area. And Minto was kind enough to send out a flyer to seven different districts. They sent a flyer to Boca Raton. Things in Boca Raton have nothing to do with something that's on Seminole Pratt Whitney Road. Somebody might not know, but this is what they did. I forgot to bring it this morning, and I apologize. But this is the 2040 plan does impact some various serious roads that are local roads in our community, and hopefully you'll all take a bus ride out to the acreage the commissioners did, so maybe everybody will come out there and see what we live. We live on dirt roads, and I hope you take that into consideration, and I did. Congratulations, Nick, for being here a year. And then I'm going to talk about All Aboard Florida, and I'm done. I'm concerned about All Aboard Florida because when I was at Treasure Coast Regional Planning Council, they were talking about shutting down roads in West Palm Beach, shutting them off because the train's 1,000 feet long. And that's insane. West Palm Beach should not be bifurcated to accommodate this insane amount of money, because All Aboard Florida, when they did their presentation, this is private, and we're going to spend the money. Well, no, it's not. It's $1.5 billion in taxpayer money. At Treasure Coast, they call it a ROD grant, and everybody got a good laugh on what I said about the ROD, because the ROD is to the taxpayers. This is not something that we should be facilitating anymore. We really do need to look at our long-term roads, because infrastructure, you got the, I think it's called the Flagler Bridge right up the street from here, shut down because our bridges are falling down. And this is universal in the United States. I'm not blaming Palm Beach County. Everywhere our bridges are falling down. My friend is a scientist, and she was where that big bridge fell down a couple of years ago. So hopefully you'll look into these things, because I think our road infrastructure is terribly neglected. And here at the county, even our road man, George Webb, lost $5 million a year for the next 5 years to repair our roads. So hopefully you'll weigh in on that. You're all here, so thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We appreciate you coming forward. Okay. All right. Later. Okay. Now we'll move on to our action item. Oh, no. Okay. George Webb, please come forward. We had your card. We weren't sure which item you wanted to speak on. Well.
Thank you, Madam Chair. George Webb, County Engineer. Just to continue the area of the county we're talking about, the western area, we're doing a lot of evaluation and studies for transportation. I just want to throw some numbers out at you. The acreage was approved for 17,000 individual lots. About 14,000 are occupied, leaving about 3,000 yet to come. We have another old orange grove out there that has a land use for another about 3,000 units, so that's 6,000. The other properties with the existing land uses could contribute another couple of thousand if they stayed exactly where they are today. So in essence, we've got 14,000 lots in the acreage trying to use North Lake Boulevard as their way of getting out. We've got 8,000 unbuilt lots that could still come as far as people out in that area, adding traffic trying to get out using North Lake Boulevard. There's no physical way that the railroad has said they will ever allow any additional lanes across those tracks. So you got what you got. So right now, if you observe this intersection in the morning, there's some really lengthy backups. If you're on North Lake in the afternoon, there's really lengthy backups on Beeline Highway. If you try and push 8,000 more units at 6, 8, 10 trips per unit trying to get out. Again, they're not all going to be on North Lake. Some will be on Okeechobee. Some will be on Southern. But there will be a percentage. It will be up there. It's just that we are trying to cram the proverbial too much stuff in the bag. You know, there's just no ability up there to provide any additional capacity. Nick and I have had a conversation about just urban interchanges in general. And the discussion is always, well, you know, we could keep expanding out at grade. We could add another turn lane here, another through lane for a lot of the locations around the county, and that's true. Unfortunately, this is not one of those locations simply because of the constraint of the railroad. So it's just something, no matter what your decision is, the people in the area are going to have to deal with, the elected officials are going to have to deal with this year, next year, next year, next year, next year, as the traffic continues to build out in that area. No matter what happens with any of the current potential approvals of projects, I'm telling you this is existing land uses in the gardens and existing land uses in Palm Beach County. So,
thank you, George. We really appreciate you being here.
I do what he just said. As I think most of you know, I'm a developer builder for over 30 years. I've built over 3,000 homes in the western area. A large percentage of those 3,000 homes I built were from residents of Broward and Dade who were fleeing from Broward and Dade because of the congestion in Broward and Dade. And what these same people that I built for that were running away from Broward and Dade are saying, we are becoming a Broward and Dade. That's what's happening to us.
Thank you, Commissioner. All right, let's move on now to our action items. Our first item, A, is our executive director evaluation process. Nick?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Pursuant to the board's request, both prior to my coming on board and then after I joined the organization, I've provided a proposal, a procedure to evaluate the performance of your executive director. Just want to highlight there are three key parts to this proposal. First, all board members get to submit an evaluation, so everyone has a voice in the process. Second, it requires a smaller group, a subcommittee of the board, to have a protracted discussion with me regarding my performance. So there's a dialogue, an opportunity for a back-and-forth evaluation verbally as well as the written evaluation. And then finally, the resultant evaluation has a direct effect on my compensation, meaning that I work for you. And if you think I'm doing well, you have the opportunity to say so. And if you think I'm doing poorly, you have an opportunity to say so. And it directly affects my performance and my experience with the board.
Well, and I worked with Nick to, and so did Vice Chair Valachet to come up with this process. I thought it was very important that every member of this board had the opportunity to weigh in on his evaluation. The Vice Chair and I have come to consensus for this smaller subcommittee to have a further discussion and to discuss potential compensation would be myself, Commissioner Valachet, Councillor Wendy Harrison, Mayor Steve Wilson, and Commissioner Mary Lou Berger. If this board is in consensus on that being the subcommittee to further discuss after, and to also collate all the comments that come in from the main board. Yes. Commissioner Taylor.
Thank you. When you talk compensation, are you saying about a raise?
Yeah, whether he's...
Okay, now his money, the money for this position, because, you know, the county is looking at, you know, issues. So, I mean, when you talk raises, I think that's something that, you know, we need to take into consideration.
No question about it. So, absolutely.
You know, as a matter of fact, we're probably not giving any raises.
Except that our funding is a pass through the county. It comes from other funds. No, I understand. I understand completely. Any further discussions on the process? Okay. Yeah, they're working. They're just lighter today.
These are publicly noticed meetings when you have them for sunshine reasons?
Yes, absolutely.
And where are the meetings?
Probably in. We haven't had one. Probably in the MPO's office. Yeah. Councilman Wilhite, question? No. Yes.
How Mike Fitzpatrick, how does the compensation for the staff work as compared to the compensation for the director?
Well, presently, both the director and the staff are employees of the county who are assigned to the MPO. I work at your pleasure under your day-to-day direction, supervision, oversight, and the staff works for me. But their compensation primarily is influenced by the county's decision on how they would amend compensation on an annual basis for the overall countywide employees. I will point out that there is an interlocal agreement that was established between the MPO and the county, allowing for the director and the county administrator to agree to some flexibility in differences between how the MPO's employees are compensated and how county employees in the broader base are compensated, because of the recognition that the MPO's funding is different from the county's funding. However, both parties need to agree on any changes, and to date, no changes have been agreed to or pursued. I mean, it's not like we're hitting a wall at all. We just haven't had a conversation about whether the MPO's compensation should be any different from general county employment.
So, MPO staff falls under the county as far as pensions, HR, and everything else.
That's correct. We receive the same benefits as general county employees.
Thank you.
Yeah, they are our host agency. Now, other MPOs, Broward is independent. Other MPOs throughout the state, some are hosted by regional planning councils. You know, it just varies. Some are conglomerate MPOs with multi-jurisdiction. So, and not one size fits all.
And Madam Chair, if I could respond to Mayor Taylor's comment. Just as by way of explanation, when I was hired, the county administrator set my compensation level. This board wasn't part of that conversation. When I took the position, the county administrator and I agreed that after a year, the board should have an opportunity to evaluate and recommend any changes that they feel would be appropriate to my compensation, with the understanding that the county administrator would have an ultimate decision to make regarding that proposal.
So this smaller board, based on the input of the large board, will be advisory to the county administrator.
And I understand that, but I just want us to take in consideration the financial place where we are as a county. So when we talk compensation, we have to keep that in mind.
Absolutely. I think that's very important. Further discussions on this item? If not, then I'll entertain a motion to approve the
Second.
Okay, motion by Taylor, second by Burdick to approve this evaluation process, including the subcommittee. Further discussion? All those in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Thanks. Unified Planning Work Program. Nick?
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I mentioned earlier, this document is the two-year budget and description of what work tasks the MPO as an organization will be performing. Changes, this was presented to you first in April as a draft. It was also circulated to the DOT, Federal Highway, and Federal Transit Administration employees for review. The document reflects any issues that were raised by those review agencies. It also clarifies that it now shows only the funds that are under direct control of this organization, which means that our budget is roughly $2 million per year. As far as the work tasks, we have created or identified categories of work that the MPO will be performing without being too specific in what the individual tasks will be to allow us the flexibility to respond to our constituents, member agencies, with particular requests. You know, for example, if you would like us to do a feasibility study of a trolley system within your municipality, we have a task that would allow for that type of effort to be performed, both with staff facilitation and consultant support, without saying we will do a trolley circulator in Lake Worth. So, you know, for example, it's not that detailed, but it does give us a framework to operate within.
Questions? Yes, Commissioner Materio.
Am I on?
Yeah.
Okay. So based on that, I would like consideration of the MPO for a Dixie Highway study from Okeechobee Boulevard to Belvedere, possibly through Treasure Coast.
Okay.
Is that a motion? I don't think I need to make a motion. I think I just need to bring it up for consideration. Is that correct?
Yeah. I think, okay. Again, we're trying to maintain as much flexibility as we can with the document so we don't have to bring amendments to you frequently. Any large-scale new initiatives would come back to you as an amendment, but a request like that would fall within the overall framework of the document as it exists today. So we would take that as a board request, and I would work with Commissioner Materio to facilitate that goal.
Mayor Taylor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to ask, I see you have regional bicycle, greenway, pedestrian planning, but I was contacted, and I brought it up at our last board meeting, by someone who was concerned about the bicycle safety and people riding bicycles, and so it got into a pretty, in-depth discussion. So I would like to ask if somehow we can do some type of a research as to how we can, one, educate bicyclists, or if we can educate them and take a look at the roads, how we have such a small area on roads for bicycle lanes, which is dangerous to me in itself. So if we can take a look at that, expand that area.
Absolutely. And I think the particular task in the work program, and it would take me a second to pull it up, regarding the bicycle activities, does consider the creation of a bicycle safety plan. That's one of the DOT's planning emphasis areas for this coming fiscal year. We're going to be working closely with the state DOT as well as with our local stakeholders to do just what you described. Both, how do we promote the maximum safety for the usage of our existing system, and how do we potentially make revisions to our standards for roadways to provide for improved facilities, safer facilities for bicycle and pedestrian users? So, yeah, I appreciate that comment.
Yeah, that's a great idea. You know, we've had two bicycle fatalities in the Boca Raton area just in the last few weeks, and it's really important issue.
Nick, could you update us on the bridge in Jupiter and the bicycle lanes that we're going to add to that?
Well, Commissioner, that's actually item 2C, and so you will get a very thorough presentation on that particular item.
You just jumped the gun a little. Mayor Triola.
Nick, this has to do with, or this is the proper place to talk about a feasibility study or traffic study on Dixie Highway between 10th Avenue North and 6th Avenue South?
I think we would be looking to work with you, yes,
okay,
regarding what potential improvements could be made to Dixie Highway between those limits as well.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and board, I mean, we don't need to get all this stuff right on the record today. I mean, if you have projects in your jurisdiction that you have concern with, just bring them forward and we will make sure that we incorporate them into our planning document. So, yes, Mayor Taylor.
And I know we've talked about all of
you speak to the microphone. The microphone can't really hear. Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
Well, not really.
I don't. I thought it was off. I don't know.
No, it's.
But anyway. Okay. Thank you. Yeah, this sounds better. What I was asking was about the rail. And I know we've talked about All Aboard Florida, but since we've been talking rails lately, I've been noticing every rail that I get to what's going on with it. But I noticed that some of them are not fenced, around in certain areas, especially at busy intersections. And it's really a big path between the rail and in some cases, even behind homes. If somehow, not necessarily a part of All Aboard Florida, but looking at the safety aspect of what can be done to improve those areas.
Sure.
I guess it's the path.
Yeah, that's important.
I think that's a great suggestion, too. And I will say the All Aboard Florida commitment to the public has been to install some sort of preventative measure along their corridor, along the FEC corridor, to reduce the trespassing activity I mean, really, when you're entering the railroad corridor away from a road with a dedicated sidewalk or bicycle facility and you're on foot, then you're trespassing within their private property. So fencing along the corridor would serve a dual purpose. It would enforce the law, and it would improve safety.
Well, and there's also a group that's working to have a greenway down the entire right-of-way, some type of a path and greenway adjacent to, and that would need to protect the users of that path from the rail activity as well. So, okay, further discussion on this item. Is that our cue to vote, Mayor Jablin?
just me. I forgot to turn it off. So.
Okay, so we have a... I'll entertain a motion now to approve the 15-16 Unified Planning Work Program.
Move approval.
Second.
Okay, motion by Berger, second by Harrison. Any further discussion? All those in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed. Great, thanks. Okay, item C is amending our 15-19 priorities to include two new items. Nick?
Okay, let me do a brief background to this item. The MPO, by Florida statute, is required to adopt a list of priorities that we then send to the Department of Transportation each fall. That list identifies projects that we would like to put money on in the five-year work program, the TIP. The list only contains projects that need money. We presently don't show the projects that have been previously prioritized by this board and then fully funded in the work program. I honestly think that's a little bit of a deficiency. I think we should continue to show the importance of projects that have been prioritized previously and fully funded until those projects are constructed. So, you know, in the fall, I would like to bring a more thorough document to you to remind you of what previous boards have approved as priorities, as well as what this board is going to be considering. So that's the background. The reason we're asking for you to add two items to the document today is because we've been presented with opportunities to enhance two projects that are currently funded in the work program by introducing MPO attributable federal funds. You have the discretion to invest MPO funds on projects that are consistent with our long-range plan and that are important to us and important enough to us that we want to see those projects happen in the next 5 years. Two projects. I'm going to give individuals opportunity to present those projects to you in greater detail would be significantly enhanced. One of them won't happen without MPO funds. The other one would happen, but it would happen at a much lesser outcome if we don't agree to allow the use of the MPO's federal dollars on these two projects. So that's why it's on the agenda now and not this fall, because there's a criticality to our action. If we don't act on these two projects, the first one is the US 1 bridge. The design changes can't be made to accomplish the construction schedule that's currently in the program. So we need to act now to either say yes or no, we want to add money. And the other one, the second tri-rail station on the existing service line in Boca Raton, there's an opportunity to take advantage of state funding that is a matching dollars, really slightly more than a 50% match, because the state fully funds the environmental analysis for the station and then matches the design and construction money necessary at a 50-50 level. So if we don't agree to match the funds for the tri-rail station, then those funds would go to another project not of our choosing. They would go back to the state, and the state would choose where in the southeast region within District 4 would be the best location to put that money. So it's an opportunity to make sure that project happens at a substantially reduced cost to us, because we're leveraging MPO funds to attract other dollars to our area. That's my brief overview, and then I'm going to turn it over first to Louis Costa with URS, and I want to point out that Vanita Saini is also here. She is the District Department of Transportation Project Manager for the US 1 Bridge Rehabilitation Project over the Loxahatchee River, and I'm going to let him give you a little more detail on that project, and then I'll introduce the folks from the RTA who are going to talk about the Boca Tri-Rail Station.
Welcome, Louis.
Thank you very much. Good morning. As Nick said, and thank you, Nick, for inviting us today, I'm working for the Department of Transportation on the Jupiter Bridge rehabilitation project, which is what originally was scoped The idea was to rehabilitate the movable span only and provide sidewalks from Beach Road, I'm sorry, from County Road A1A to Beach Road. As part of the project, we were also going to provide a river walk for the town of Jupiter through a joint participation agreement. Through coordination with the MPO and the town of Jupiter, there was a strong interest in providing bicycle lanes, designated bicycle lanes. So we started investigating options on how to do this, and we successfully we were able to incorporate this into the project. However, there is a cost. As you can see, the existing bridge has no sidewalks or bike lanes, and it has a barrier that's called a post and beam rail, which is not crash tested. And what that means is it wasn't originally designed to take on vehicular impact. The movable span has an open grid deck. It's not very bicycle friendly. As any of you may have gone over this type of bridge, the grid openings are pretty large and they conflict with the bike wheels. The original scope was going to provide just sidewalks on the roadside and resurface the roadway approaches and restripe. And then on the bridge, it was going to incorporate a 5-foot sidewalk by cantilevering the portion of the deck with no substructure work. No foundation work was going to be required. And we were going to introduce traffic crash-tested barriers, both to protect pedestrians from vehicles and in the median where currently there's just a traffic separator which a vehicle could mount and go onto the other side of the road and potentially have a head-on collision. With the feedback from the MPO and from the town of Jupiter, we looked at the scenario of actually widening the roadway approaches. If you look at this dark brown area, that implies further pavement widening. We'd have to reconstruct the curb and gutter, which currently sits here, to further out and relocate the guardrail. This comes with additional costs in roadway fill, pavement, et cetera. That's where we are requiring the additional MPO funding. On the bridge, we were able to, just with minor modifications, accommodate the designated bike lane, which are this 5-foot area on the shoulder side. We had to narrow one of the lanes, and we had to narrow the median area and introduce a single barrier in order to maximize the space that's available. Other than that, the bridge does not require much more additional work. There is a little bit of foundation work that the original scope didn't require, and it's related to where we put the movable bridge gates and signals. Similarly, on the movable span, we'd have the same arrangement. There's some changes on the movable span, like structural elements that need to steel elements that need to be introduced in the median and on the outsides of the bridge. We will provide a skid resistance, bicycle friendly surface on that 5-foot designated lane on the movable span. The cost differential from the original scope to what we are proposing is approximately $2 million. And that is where we are seeking for MPO approval to be able to incorporate this scope changes into the DOT work schedule. Any questions?
Thank you, Louis. Yes.
Just curious, from a design phase or design viewpoint, why are the crash-resistant barriers not outside the bike lanes rather than just the pedestrian lanes? It seems like you would want to, you know, and Mayor Taylor and Mayor Haney have talked about the accidents we've had. A lot of people are getting killed on bicycles from vehicles coming up behind them and just, you know, crashing straight into them. Why would we not think about putting the barrier between the bike lane and the vehicle lane?
Yeah, you know, the designated bicycle lanes are accommodated as best as the space allows. In this particular location, introducing the traffic barrier in front of the bike lane would have eliminated the required vehicular buffer, which there's criteria that requires a bridge to have a minimum clear deck width. So the bike lane serves not just as a bike lane, it provides that required dimension of total clear width. So if introducing the barrier in front of the bike lane would have meant we had to widen more in order to maintain that clear deck width. So it wasn't an option at this location.
Okay, further questions? Commissioner Fitzpatrick.
Well, I had the same question because Boynton Beach Boulevard has the same problem. And what's the point of having a bike lane if you can't bring your family on it? Who would want or drive, you know, ride with an 8-year-old on that? And what you're basically saying, if you have that clear width for what? That means people can swerve into the bike lane. Bikes are supposed to be, you know, less stressful. I always find riding on those kind of situations very stressful, and I wouldn't want to bring a child in that situation. We're supposed to be promoting biking. How not? You need a barrier in between, and I think, you know, something else has got to give, but that barrier, I think, is very important. Skinny down the bike lane, let the handlebar go into the sidewalk area, but I think I agree with the commissioner. Bike barrier between the cars and bikes is important.
Councillor Harrison.
I didn't know if you wanted to give him a chance to answer that. Oh. But my comments are on a different matter.
Okay, Lewis, if you want to address that.
No, not really. I mean, I don't set policy. Designated lanes are what they are. DOT uses their standards for bike lanes, which these are compliant 100%. For a designated bike lane. I mean, I understand if you are with a young child, you always have the choice of going on the sidewalk, which this bridge doesn't have and now will have. So we provide bike lanes as another vehicle on the road. And you know, enforcement is a concern, and it has always been. But if the rules are followed, those are safe options for bicyclists.
Okay. I'm going to, because you have a different item,
yeah,
I mean,
I'll
a different issue.
Okay.
Would you're commenting on this bike issue. Yes, go ahead, Mayor Taylor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I just wanted to, okay. I just wanted to mention that perhaps that was the way, you know, before a lot of people start riding bicycles. You know, I know in Riviera Beach there was this problem with the bridge, you know, where we had pedestrians killed, and then they decided to put up the barrier. And it's unfortunately that it takes someone dying before we make the changes necessary to guarantee, at least to help with the safety. So what I would like to ask, and I understand what you mean policy because I served in the legislature, but I would like to ask Nick if, and the madam, the chair, if we can write a letter to FDOT stressing to them how it is unsafe to have that particular as it is designed now, and perhaps we can get some type of a change to that policy.
Okay, good point. Commissioner Burdick.
Thank you. I have one question for you and then one for Nick. With regards to the new Flagler Bridge that's being constructed downtown West Palm Beach, is there a bike lane on that?
I'm not familiar with the Flagler Bridge. That's not one of our projects. Sorry.
Nick, do you know?
I believe the answer is yes.
Okay.
But I will confirm that for you.
Okay. And then my second question is on our
microphone too.
On our priorities list, can you define for me what the special use lanes are? There's one on State Road 7 to the Broward Line and Glades Road, State Road 7 to Federal Highway.
That's an interesting history question. We will be presenting the results of a very detailed analysis of both the State Road 7 corridor and the Glades Road corridor, trying to determine what level of investment was appropriate for those areas. The long-range plan that was adopted back in 2009 contemplates widening both of those corridors from 6 lanes to 8 lanes, right, with the understanding that the additional lanes on the outside would be for buses only. So we have been doing a very significant evaluation of those corridors to determine if that's a good investment of transportation resources for those two corridors. I don't want to, you know, give away the outcome yet, but that presentation is coming to you in the next few months.
Okay. Would special use lanes, are you looking into? We've talked in the past about Okeechobee Boulevard. There aren't any bike lanes on that, and you regularly see individuals choosing to ride their bike down Okeechobee Road. And we've talked in the past about looking at special use lanes for express buses. Is that in this program at all?
You're going to force me to give away some of the outcome. No. and I guess I should, because item 2D,
yeah,
deals with our desired improvements for our highway network as well as for our transit system. The short answer to your question is, based on our land use pattern and our ability to afford the operational costs of service, of bus service, it's very difficult, if not impossible, to demonstrate the financial feasibility of building dedicated transit lanes in Palm Beach County. That doesn't mean we don't want express bus service with enhanced transit shelters that run on a more regular basis with less stops, which is what's part of the presentation to you in item 2D. But it does mean that we can't justify the additional capital expense of building lanes just for buses.
Councillor Harrison.
Thank you. And I actually do want to follow up on the suggestion, because I want to be careful about redesigning something from the dais. And we do have many – we have different types of bicycle riders. We have the more professional type of bicycle riders, and I think they prefer a more roadway surface. And at the town, DOT came and made a presentation to the town, and we're just thrilled with the progress that they've made. There were no bicycle lanes at all in the previous design. So this is a huge improvement, because not only are there bicycle lanes, but they're 5 foot. So they will be 5 foot lanes?
Yes.
Okay, because that's tremendous. And DOT actually reduced the width of the roadway lanes, which is a big change for them. So we're just thrilled. And I think having the barrier between the bikes and pedestrians is actually pretty important, because some of those the bikes can be a danger to pedestrians, and I think we should look at the outside pedestrian areas, the sidewalks, as places where the 8-year-old would go, because that's how you protect children, and they are permitted on sidewalks by state law, I believe. So I think it's a great design, and I wouldn't want to do anything that would slow it down. So I'm very pleased. The town is very pleased, and we also very much appreciate the support of the MPO, because if we hadn't brought this up and if you hadn't been supportive, it wouldn't have happened.
Right.
And there's a tremendous amount of bikes. I wish we had some photos, because currently bicyclists use the middle lane that it's basically just a very low concrete
Raised median.
They ride on the median currently because they're right.
Right
thank
there.
You for going back to that. Right. So that's where bicyclists ride now. And the only unanswered question that we had at the town was if the bridge would be able to support the strips that would make the noise from the cars.
Rumble
quieter.
Strips,
right? Which would also improve safety for the cars too on the actual bascule. That was the only unanswered question that we had. The DOT wasn't sure if the weight of the bridge would be able to.
I don't see why it couldn't be incorporated. Rumble strips are a sort of striping, adds no significant weight to. I'm not sure if that's what you're referring to.
Yeah, it's not rumble strips that may warn you of an impending hazard. It's the coating on the bridge that makes...
Oh, you mean like a friction course.
Right. That makes it less noisy for the car.
You mean the... Oh, you mean the lightweight concrete.
You're talking about the wheel paths or...
Right,
or,
through the grading.
Yes, I'm sorry I didn't know the name.
Deck,
yes, the wheel paths.
Yeah, that is a bigger challenge because that adds a lot of weight on the movable span, which requires, you know, enhancements to the machinery and to the girders and the trunnion, and it starts adding weight and cost to the project. And sometimes an old bascule bridge doesn't have the capacity to hold that heavier equipment. So we said maybe at the at the town we're still on a maybe mode on that. We're evaluating that.
All right. So but we'd appreciate you continuing to evaluate.
Sure. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I just want to remark, and I understand what you're saying about your project, you know, which is fine. But unfortunately or fortunately, you know, we have problems all over the county.
Definitely.
So we're not just, you know, I understand you're concerned about what your town, you know, but we have big problems with bicycles.
Sure.
So I would still like to ask that we take a look at how that can be designed to assure safety as much as we can.
Absolutely. And I think that's an important countywide consideration. Exactly. You know, I think this particular project itself, I think, is a wonderful demonstration of the power of this body. That we saw this project coming forward, you know, we stopped and said, wait a minute, you know, you're not providing for the safety for our bicycle and pedestrian users in the county, and worked with the city, the host community, and came up with, a very innovative design to cantilever those sidewalks beyond the bridge decking. I think is really wonderful. And, you know, this is walking the walk, folks. Mm-hmm. Really it is. So.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Thank you.
Sorry. Some time ago, Nick, I had a conversation with you about the bicycle lane that we need to put on Avenue E. And we recently applied for a grant, but that grant is not going to cover the $2 million gap that we need to do that. So if there is any room that we can put in here somewhere, you know, for us to try to obtain some funding to help us get to that $2 million mark would be appreciated.
Okay, good point. Any further discussions on this particular project? Okay, we're going to move on to the next one, which is the... you want to do these motions separately, although the amendments, one move. It's the pleasure of the board. Do you want to go ahead and approve this one? Okay, go ahead and make a motion to approve this one.
Move that we approve the $2 million incremental.
Okay, motion by Valachet, second by Taylor on the U.S. 1 bridge funding. All those in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, like sign, thanks. Okay, now we'll move on to the Tri-Rail station. Welcome, Bill Cross.
Okay, good morning. Again, my name is Bill Cross. I'm the Director of Planning Capital Development for the South Florida Regional Transportation Authority. We're the operator of Tri-Rail. So I appreciate being invited here to speak. I will try to be as brief as I can. The discussion this morning is about a potential second Boca Raton Tri-Rail station for the existing service and an opportunity in front of us. So let me just begin by a little bit of background. This project, as Nick pointed out, is in your plan, has been part of your cost-feasible plan since 2009, which has triggered a few steps, including partial funding by DOT at this point. It's also included in our agency's transportation development plan. And further, it's consistent with the City of Boca Raton's comprehensive plan and their multimodal transportation district. We have also done a very preliminary planning level study of potential sites for this station back in 2010, and I'll touch on that again in a moment briefly. Just the overall picture of Tri-Rail, this is the ridership over time, over the last, I guess it's 10 years or so that's up there. You can see generally it is trending in a positive fashion. Some of our trends, just to mention to you that the we have seen a flip in our ridership patterns. The orientation is growing towards the north now instead of the south, which was kind of our historical pattern over the first 25 years. We're also seeing a very strong growth in younger riders, the 16 to 24, which is a very positive sign. And, of course, along with that younger demographic is also coming a higher usage of bikes and peds from our stations. Just to kind of show you how the different stations lay out as far as ridership and to point out the Boca Raton station is now our number one station on the entire system. Previously, that had been the Metrorail transfer where you would transfer into downtown Miami. So certainly a lot of positive growth in Boca Raton. As far as the transit market in Boca Raton, again, it's our busiest station. We're handling over 1,600 passengers a day. There is quite a bit of activity in the area there. Of course, we have the universities as well as the Arvida Park of Commerce and all the large employment centers in the area. And I did want to point out here, because I think it's important to the success of the station, that we have excellent partnership not only with the city but also private business to run a significant shuttle bus program in the area. PalmTran also runs their Route 94, which accesses the FAU as well as downtown Boca Raton, which is also a very successful route. There's also pedestrian and bicycle paths that lead directly over to the university from the station. I had mentioned the analysis, planning level analysis that we had done a few years ago, and it tried to look at some of the key elements as to, you know, what's the station spacing, how would you access it, and what are some potential sites in the area. As you know, it's a fairly well-developed area already, so there's limited locations that would be available. I know it's hard to see on here, but there were several locations generally located like from the King's Deli area down to some of the newer office development, military and Glades. This just orients you. I'm sure you're all familiar with this area in general, but you've got the employment center to the north near our existing station. You have the university in downtown Boca Raton to the east of the proposed station, and as well as the mall area to the west. And I think what's important and what I think was partially responsible for the initial interest in the second station is there's a lot of redevelopment opportunity between the mall itself and where the station would be. While it's fully developed now, I think the general consensus that it is no longer at its fullest and highest use, and there are redevelopment, significant redevelopment opportunities in that area that this proposed station would serve. The study came out with a preliminary recommendation, and I would say that it's very preliminary and certainly subject to change based upon availability of right-of-way and such, and we do need to do more studies. But we did find a couple of sites that were practical. However, all of the sites are limited in their size. So the scope of this station would be a little bit different from a normal tri-rail station in that there would not be a large 200-300 space parking associated with it. We would look for joint parking opportunities, and it would be primarily a shuttle bus, pedestrian, kiss and ride type of operation where people would get off and then they would get on a shuttle bus to circulate through the office park and then over to the mall area. So again, the opportunities here I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of development in the area, a lot of opportunity for redevelopment, and it's also a fairly good walkable area, and with the addition of shuttle buses, we think that we can access the land use there from the station quite readily. So now to the dollars and the opportunity. So I'll just go through this from the top down. You can see that the NEPA and design, and that's the more detailed studies that would actually identify a specific site. That's programmed by DOT as a result of this project being in your cost-feasible plan for $1.5 million in fiscal 16-17. And DOT also programmed in 17-18 the dollars to purchase the right-of-way and construction. However, those dollars require a match, a dollar-for-dollar match, which is not currently available. That's today's opportunity to match MPO dollars to that. Some of the next steps, if we were to get the funding, we would move forward with the planning and NEPA study. That would entail a significant coordination, of course, with the city of Boca Raton and the other local stakeholders, which would include the business interest in the area. We would have to establish a specific right-of-way location for the station, updated cost estimates, et cetera. And potentially, the way the dollars lay out, this would allow for a station opening sometime in 2018. That's my presentation. I'd be glad to try to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Bill. I really appreciate your presentation. Questions for Bill on this issue? Wendy?
Quick one. Thank you. Would the connections to FAU then be made from this station? So you would relocate the shuttles?
It opens up an opportunity for a second connection to the university. Of course, there's some existing land use right on Glades Road that could also be served on the way to FAU. As far as the bike ped, you actually already have a really nice path that goes directly from the existing station to the university.
Okay.
And given that Glades Road is elevated at that point, probably for pedestrians and bicyclists, the best choice will continue to be the existing station.
Okay.
But as far as shuttle bus circulation, it opens up a second opportunity for direct connection to the front side of the university.
Okay.
Yeah, in this location, it's the Town Center Mall is one of Simon's highest performing regional malls, which is a couple blocks to the east of this. You know, so I think that's a big attractor. There is it's a huge employment center there as well. There's multiple office buildings. There's a lot of retail. And as Bill mentioned, there is a very, very large piece of land that has been acquired that is coming in for a certain amount of redevelopment. We're not certain, but it will be a significant residential and retail mixed use right there. So, you know, we in Boca, we figured out how to maximize a tri-rail station, and our northern one has been a real success, as you can see by the ridership. You know, we've worked very, very hard with our corporate citizens to partner with us, and they do contribute to the shuttle service, and it's really become quite an attractive place to bring a business. You know, one of the reasons why we were able to retain Office Depot's global headquarters was because they're part of this transit system. So, I mean, you know, it does work. We see the need at the southern end of the city, and we do see the ability for it to be extremely successful and got a lot of trips off of Glades Road, quite honestly, and off of I-95. So, you know, again, this is what we all sit here and say, we want to get off those roads and get onto transit, and here's an opportunity for us to do that. So, yes.
Where it said 8.5 million local. What does that mean, local?
Well, it means that when the request for state funding was initially made, the RTA had identified a commitment to provide the local match, but that funding is no longer available. So what they're asking for is, can we supplement the state funding with MPO funds, which would be a permissible match for the state money? So that's why we're here. They're asking us for the $8.5 million. Local is MPO funds.
And the local MPO funds come from?
Well, they're not local. They're matching funds. I mean, the initial presentation identified local funds, meaning RTA or city dollars would be contributed. What the statute requires for this program, this Transportation Regional Incentive Program, TRIP funds, is to provide matching dollars from any source other than the state funds. So what we're offering to the board for approval is to allow MPO federal funds, not local funds. So we're not committing any of the municipalities or the county's revenue to the project. We're asking if you would like to allocate MPO federal tax gas tax revenue to this project so that we can take advantage of the matching state funds.
And what other projects would be postponed?
Great question. One of the largest items that we are funding right now with our MPO attributable dollars in the work program, in the TIP, is the Northern Layover Facility. That's the parking lot for the tri-rail trains. Currently, the trains stay overnight, if you will, just north of Okeechobee Boulevard on the existing corridor. The RTA has identified, and we have agreed as a board recently as last fall to allocate MPO funds to construct a new parking lot for the trains north of the existing location along the South Florida Rail Corridor, just northwest of the existing Mangonia Park Station. That's roughly a $30 million project, give or take, maybe 32. So what we would propose to do is defer that construction to create the ability to use the state money for the Boca Tri-Rail Station.
And SFRTA, you're okay with that, deferring the layover facility?
Well, so I will share with you that as an agency priority, the layover facility, it does rank higher in our priorities than a second station at Boca Raton. However, we are glad to work with DOT on and the MPO on how these dollars line up, because our plan was never to wait for the years in which this layover money was showing up based upon the MPO prioritization. We plan to do a design build finance RFP for that site, where we will go out and we'll get a contractor to come in and to finance and build the project as soon as possible. We know there's interest in us moving our parking lot. I think that's a great way of putting it, Nick, out of downtown West Palm and into this industrial park area. So we want to do everything that we can to accomplish that as soon as we can. So if this change puts the dollars out just one more year, that's really, given in these low interest rates when we're looking at doing this with a design build finance anyway, it's not an impact. We don't think it's going to have an impact to our schedule for moving the layover. So we think at the end of the day it's a win-win, and we can work with this change.
Great. Councilmember Fitzpatrick, and then Councilmember Wilson.
So to follow up on that, if my understanding of doing it this way, by deferring it for the train park station for a year and going for Boca, you're actually going to capture more dollars from the state?
That's correct.
We're going to
if we don't act today, we will lose the state matching funds for the Boca Tri-Rail Station.
Okay. As a just a comment about the backup, I personally do well with maps, so I don't think on either of these things I saw any maps. So I was picturing this in the wrong place in my head. So I would just – and as far as the FAU connection – I've been going there quite often, and I believe coming from this station to FAU would be distance wise like 50% of coming from the existing Tri-Rail. So I know the other one is more scenic along the El Rio Canal, but as a student and knowing the other students, they would prefer the shorter route. So
sure.
I would be interested in making sure that the connection up and over I-95, there's a good way to do that without, you know, having to go around and that sort of thing.
Absolutely. We can certainly investigate some trail linkage to this new station and that university. Plus, you have Lynn University right up the street as well. So, Councilmember Wilhite.
Thank you. Just a couple of questions. I guess a couple of things that concern me is, I know you say it only could put it off a year, but when you take 25% of the funding out of a project, I don't see how something just happens to be put off a year. So a concern is there. The second thing that concerns me is that, you know, the city of West Palm Beach and the commuters that come down here are frequently slowed down because the trains have to get up and down the tracks and move into the storage lot. So they block more of the travel lanes now to get into that area, and I think that's part of the reason maybe you're trying to relocate them to a more location and stuff. And, you know, the other thing is we talk about how Boca maybe has risen to be the busiest one, but if we build a second one, they're certainly not going to be the busiest because we're not going to double the ridership. We're just going to try and disperse it a little bit out of that station to spread it across to utilize two stations. I guess then my question will be, what would be the delay in time to stop at additional locations for those riders to get to their destination? When you put more stations in, you obviously have to stop and slow down. So you potentially lengthen the ride of your travel to stop at more locations. So I think there's more things that just, you know, that haven't been answered to this as much than just saying it's great that we need another location and a stop because we potentially have some redevelopment in the area. So, you know, I think you have unanswered questions whether or not you have the shared parking. I think there's just a lot of questions still that arise around this that maybe we need to bring back some more definitive answers with this, whether the Boca location is a better spot or not. But if you already have to deal with, as you said, the aspect of getting from FAU to there and stuff. So I guess I just look at maybe having some more answers. And I know it sounds like and I don't know how long we can put it off to what the state matching funds are, but I think to have some more of those questions answered. Mm-hmm. What's that?
Yeah.
You know, I know it all sounds good, but it came to us right then and said, oh, you know, we have to do this or never. So, yeah. You know, that concerns me, too, when we start putting us under those constraints.
Councilman Wilhut, I will say that I don't think, and I think Bill can probably back this up, that I don't believe this is going to dilute the ridership at the other station at all. I mean, like I said, with the Town Center Mall and that whole area, and this isn't really based on redevelopment. It's based on existing development right there. I don't know how many, maybe Deputy Mayor Scott knows the number. I don't know how many office buildings and employment centers are down there at that south side and Western Glades Road. So that there is a whole huge amount, even if it's just the employees that work at Town Center Mall. I mean, there's enough ridership right there to have this station be a very, very robust facility.
We have located in that area. We have three corporate headquarters that are located right near and very close to where this Tri-Rail station will be located. And we have a redevelopment project that is multi-use residential that is looking at this area, knowing that there is a potential for a Tri-Rail station there, because that will be a real draw in terms of being able to locate residents who would be working in that vicinity for the corporate headquarters that are located there, as well as Town Center Mall. And one of the things is that we have a lot of students that come up from Broward County. And so this location would be going northbound for them to get off and for other people to get on, allowing for more space on that Tri-Rail with the capacity that it has getting on at Yamato. This would afford, a lot more space available because people would be able to disembark at that Glades Road location.
Any further questions? Yes, Shannon.
Thank you. At some point before the layover station actually gets completed, do we have an opportunity to have a conversation about that?
Absolutely.
I know that there are issues with its location as well, and not so much the location as much as the noise level and the usage and how it affects the quality of life of the people that are there. So it comes back to the MPO. We have a conversation, and we can discuss this.
Absolutely. We need to look at that site plan a little bit closer. So, okay, further discussion on this issue? Okay, seeing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, approval by Scott, second by Taylor. Further discussion? All those in favor state so by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, like sign. Great. Thanks so much. All right, 2040 long-range transportation plan desires, not needs. We have desires. Nick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This morning I'm going to introduce to you Arturo Perez from Lethbridge Consulting Engineers. He is our consultant for our long-range plan update. I want to make clear to you what we're doing and what we're not doing this morning. First, the information that's presented to you has been refined to incorporate a lot of stakeholder input as well as the board discussion on both the highway and transit as well as the freight components of our desired investments over the next 25 years. The goal of this document is to identify those projects, especially the major projects, that we would like to build over the next 25 years if money was no object. These are the projects that we think are important enough for us to accomplish our mobility goals that we would like to show them in our plan. So I want to make clear the functional value of this vote is to define which projects of the vast universe of investments that we can make, which projects will be further evaluated to be potentially included in our cost feasible plan. So the desires plan is the biggest filter. It's the, if we didn't have to worry about money, what would we like to spend money on? I highlight this fact because not only are you considering what's on the page, but you're also considering what's not on the page. And what's not on the page is the urban interchanges from the last long-range plan. I want to point out to the board regarding some of the public comments we received earlier, and I know there are some cards on this particular item, so you'll get some additional comments this morning, that there was an outstanding question last month regarding the North Lake Boulevard and Beeline Highway intersection. We had asked for a more refined analysis from the DOT staff to explain the costs and the benefits, as well as the mitigation options for various improvement scenarios. They have told me just a few weeks ago that they will not be ready with that analysis for several months. So my response to them was, okay, as a board, the discussion and reservation has been there has been limited, if any, support for grade separations at that location. So my recommendation to you is to exclude the interchange in any fashion at North Lake and Beeline and allow the department an opportunity to come back to you at a later meeting with a more thorough presentation, at which point you could consider whether you wanted to bring it back into the plan or not. So the vote today would allow us to proceed without any interchanges that were concluded in the last plan.
Commissioner Burdick.
I think at our last meeting, several asked for this information ahead of time so that we could look at it. It's very difficult, and I think we have a responsibility to have this information ahead of time.
Okay.
So I don't know if I can sit here today and vote on this. We had the same conversation last time we were looking at this.
Okay. So
can you get this to us, to the consultant?
Yeah, actually, that was in your packet a week ago. These are just bigger versions of the same maps.
Well,
I don't think he understands what you mean.
Yeah, I don't.
Okay, well, let's let Nick finish, then we'll let Arturo make the presentation, and then if we feel that it's premature, we can certainly amend our actions. Nick.
And I just wanted to point out as well that with respect to the transit component of our Desires plan, we are currently working very actively with both PalmTran and RTA to identify further refinements to that plan. This is our best system that we can put before you today. But there may be additional revisions that we will bring forward as part of that ongoing analysis that we're performing with both of those agencies. And if you have any specific questions on either of those components of the plan, the PalmTran system or the Tri-Rail system, I wanted to note that both Bill Cross from RTA, who presented to you earlier, and Charles Frazier from PalmTran are here to assist me with fielding those types of questions.
Arturo, welcome.
Okay, good morning, Madam Chair, members of the board. Like Nick mentioned, we are here to try to get endorsement of the two maps, the highway and the transit and freight. And this information was included in the packet that you received about a week ago. It was like a 345-page document. But these are 11 by 17 versions of the same maps. Like I mentioned, it's in the packet and includes both the maps and the list. The list have been divided into three sections for the highway side, where you have the 2014 through 2019 committed projects, then the 2020 through 2040 desire plan projects that are competing for MPO funding. And then a separate list, you have the ones that are competing for SIS and Turnpike funding. There should be two stacks.
You know, you handed out pieces of paper, but I'm not sure that everyone got the two documents that you were hoping to talk from.
So okay.
I was hoping to get the right sheets of paper in front of
you. Okay. There should be a highway and a transit map.
We're highway on this side.
We're all highway. I don't
right,
see any.
Any,
you got both?
You have a
transit. Oh.
Well,
then they didn't make
I have just the transit.
Oh, maybe these should continue around the table?
Those are highway.
Can I say something about PalmTran while he's doing that?
Sure, you can fill in while we're distributing transit plans.
Now, I just wanted to mention, unlike some of the other plans where you might just have desires that are pretty wide-reaching. We're really going to try to narrow things down. The Palm Tran Service Board is going to meet. We're going to have a retreat and go over the priority list because the plan that you have now shows many, many improvements, express bus and regular bus service. And obviously, as a county commission, many of you will be looking at it, you know, the long-term Palm Tran plan. But I just want you to know this plan is definitely going to change. It's not that it might change, but it will change. But because of the MPO schedule, we need to look at it as an MPO. But we will be presenting amendments.
Okay. Madam Chair?
Yes.
Yes.
I was looking at on the list of projects competing for MPO funding. And I see here Silver Beach Road from Old Dixie to US 1 is to be widened from 2 lanes to 3 lanes. Now, I know the repaving or repaving has been done, but, and I guess I hadn't looked at the top of this page here because what I was going to ask, I know when the presentation was made to our council concerning this project, it was stated that part would be done first and then the following year would be the section from Old Dixie to Congress Avenue. And I see it is on the committed list. So thank you.
Okay, Arturo, are you ready?
Yes, thank you. Sorry about that confusion with the map. So there are two maps. One is the highway and one is the transit. We're going to talk about the highway first. And this is the northern portion of the county. Like Nick mentioned, the interchanges, the urban interchanges that were in the previous or the currently adopted plan have been removed in this series of maps on along Okeechobee and North Lake and 710. And this is the southern portion of the county. this map includes all the comments that have been received both from the TAC and CAC and the general public and the county. Does anybody have any comments on the highway set of lists or projects or maps, I mean?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I had a question about one on here. It appears to be like number 58, Polo Road from Lake Worth Road to Lyons, a new 2-lane. Well, what's the desire or the need for that? Do you have any idea? It's showing as a new 2-lane, the little black dots. It's just south of Lake Worth Road.
Yeah,
maybe if I could answer that question. That particular facility was added at the request of county staff. It's an unbuilt roadway today that would run through the Gulfstream Polo area in the southeast quadrant of Lake Worth and Lyons Road. That facility was added to the county's thoroughfare map primarily to require a group of landowners to work together in accommodating one another with a common roadway. The concern was if the facility was not shown in the county's thoroughfare map, then the landowners along Lake Worth Road would not have to convey right-of-way for a road giving access to the folks who are landlocked. So that was the concept.
And this is due to some large developers potentially buying property, and they're trying to develop it a large scale.
It would be in there. That corridor would be necessary to support both existing land use designations on those properties, comprehensive plan changes that have already been approved by the county commission to allow between 2, 3, and 5 units to the acre to be constructed on properties within that area. So it's not to accommodate a large scale development because those properties have really come forward in a piecemeal fashion.
At this point.
But it would but it's a facility that would be needed as a kind of central corridor to accommodate any activity on that property.
Nick, for clarification, and the landowners are going to construct the road at their expense?
You know, that's a great point. What we're trying to do is identify all of the corridors, especially the unbuilt corridors, that we believe are necessary to move people and goods and to support maximize the efficiency of our existing network. Because it's on this list doesn't necessarily mean it will be constructed with public funds. our desire for several of these unbuilt facilities would be to have the private entities who would primarily use them for access to construct all or a portion of those to pay all or a portion of those costs. The line gets a little gray when it comes to what constitutes a private cost versus a public cost, because these private developers do have roadway impact fee obligations, which is revenue that we count in our plan, but they also have the ability, consistent with county ordinance, to use some of their impact fee obligations to build portions of these corridors that are not explicitly for their benefit. I know it's a complicated way of saying they get to use their impact fee money sometimes to build the road instead of giving it to us, to the county rather, to spend on other roads in other places. So the answer is we will try to use private funds to construct those new facilities to the extent possible, but they may be able to divert some of their impact fee payments to those facilities. And so it will be somewhat of a gray area that we'll have to muddy our way through.
Okay. Further questions? Wendy.
Just a quick question. In the city of West Palm Beach, Australian Avenue was originally programmed to be increased, the lanes. And I drive that area a lot, the area just north of downtown. And I'm glad it's no longer programmed that way. So is that the suggestion of the city? Is that what happened?
And the residents.
And the residents. Good, yeah. Good. I think that was a great decision. So just okay. A comment.
Excellent. Further questions on the roadway map? Yes, Commissioner James.
Yeah, I just need to make the observation that it looks like Project 22, which is committed funds to extension of State Road 7 to North Lake, I would have to refuse from endorsing this plan for a reason. That's a project that the city has and continues to fight. So,
thank you, Commissioner James. We certainly appreciate that comment and understand. Further comments on the roadmap? Okay, let's move to transit.
Okay. On the transit side, you have both transit and freight lifts, and it's divided into two parts. You have the ones that are partially or fully funded projects, and then the ones that are in the desires plan that are both greater than $5 million or less than $5 million that are going to be seeking funds through a procedure that the MPO is going to implement, where they you would put monies into a pot, and then each categorical project would try to get some of those funds on an annual basis. And we talked about this in the last two meetings. So this is what the transit map, the SIRES map, looks like. As Nick mentioned, we are working with both PalmTran and SSRTA to refine this map, but this is it has the latest information as of this past week. And one of the things that came from the last meeting, I believe, from the board, was that they didn't want to see the extension of Tri-Rail to the northwest past the station at the hospital near Blue Heron, and that has been removed in this map.
Okay. Members, questions on the transit map? Judy.
I'm sorry, would you repeat that?
The northwest tri-rail extension, which would be the green dash line, before it was being shown going all the way to Seminole Pratt Whitney, and now is stopped near Blue Heron.
Okay. All right, thank you. Okay.
And there were two additional stations also removed.
Commissioner Fitzpatrick, do you have a question?
Yes, if you fly into PDIA, how do you get from there to tri-rail and to the Port of Palm Beach without a car?
You don't.
You want to answer the existing condition?
You take a cab.
You answer existing, and then I'll answer what I think we ought to do next.
Okay, great. I'm not sure if this is on. I'll speak up.
Bill Cross, SFRTA. So the answer is today there is PalmTrans service from the Palm Beach International Airport that brings you into the downtown hub next to our existing Tri-Rail station in downtown West Palm Beach. We have been working with PalmTrans on this issue actually just over the last 2 months to try to get extended service so that their span of service during the day better matches with our span of service, and also importantly weekend service, which currently is significantly less than our span of service on the weekend in particular. So we are working cooperatively with PalmTrans to try to ensure that there's a better existing connection at that location.
Well, currently, suppose you got a flight out at noon. How much time, say you're coming from Boynton, how much extra time over a car do you have to plan to get there using Tri-Rail and PalmTrans?
I suppose it depends where you're coming from.
Clearly,
from the south, which is more typical, I suppose. You know, you've got to park your car. You're going to have to catch our train on up to downtown West Palm Beach, which is a little beyond, right, your ultimate destination. And then you'll have to take a transfer. And one of the issues that we're working on with PalmTrans, again, is how do they line up their buses so that they meet well with our trains, particularly from the south, to ensure that there's a timely transfer and that the times are not excessive. But that is an issue today. The transfer times associated with getting to the airport are significant.
So what way I'm hearing, you're talking, you want to go to the airport without using your car, you got to plan an hour and a half extra.
Or not.
At least.
That's probably not an unreasonable estimate.
And if somebody comes in from a foreign area or another part of the country and they don't know the exact system, that they're going to be kind of stuck.
Well, Commissioner, maybe if I could turn this into a kind of a proactive discussion. What I'm hearing is we need improved transit connectivity to our airport.
Correct.
And what I would like to suggest is that ongoing analysis that we're seeking to perform is to identify transit hubs within our county, whether they're educational facilities, airport, seaport, major regional destinations, downtown activity centers. We want to first identify those locations on a countywide map. Second, we want to identify express services, premium transit service, to accommodate those destinations. And then third, and probably most important for the planning of an actual trip, is we need to look in greater detail at the last mile component of those destinations to determine how do you get from a express bus to the front door of your gate at the airport, for example, or to the doorway of the Port of Palm Beach to embark on a cruise. Those are the types of investments we need to identify in that transit review. The big picture stuff, the express bus service, the capital costs associated with shelters, the capital cost associated with vehicles, are things that we should identify explicitly in our long-range plan. The smaller last-mile improvements are things that we would be identifying through our categorical funding approach as transit enhancements. So if you need a particular shuttle service to connect you from point A to point B within a local area, if we need to construct a better pedestrian facility with shade, with a wider sidewalk to accommodate pedestrian activity from the transit stop to the final destination. Those are the kind of projects we want to enable this board to identify, to prioritize, and then to fund in the next 5 years.
Okay.
Yeah. Commissioner Wilhug.
Thank you. You know, overwhelmingly, I've heard for many years that this county is just underserviced in our airport and our port because of the inability to get around it and to bring the tourism here to allow them to utilize this so easily is because we make it so difficult. we don't make it readily available for someone to fly in from another state into our port or into our airport and get directly to the port. And we've just, you know, we hear we don't get the airlines coming here, the number of trips, the, you know, the ticket counter, you know, those all count up with funding. And then we just don't get the number of trips. And it's frankly easier for commuters to drive to another airport a little further to get a better flight rate and time. And I know it sounds like we may only need an hour and a half, 2 hours to go on one train to make transfers. Imagine that with a family of three or four or five people with all of their bags trying to do that. They're not going to do that. So we've just taken that whole group of people out of the mix and put them in their car and taken them straight to wherever they want to go, and they're going to do it themselves. Because I frankly know I'm going to do that. With my 5- and 6-year-old and all of our bags, I'm not going to do transfers. I'm just not going to. And so the thing we need is we need direct connections, and not even connections, but dedicated train from the airport to Tri-Rail, from Tri-Rail to the port. These are things where a family gets on, and it's one-stop shop. They get off, and if we really want to enhance our port and bringing in these ships or anything else to go anywhere, that's what we have to do. And, you know, frankly, we can talk about all these little roads and improvements and little places. Those are the big things that you would have to make a bold statement on, because it's going to impact what's already existing and built so much more than all these other roads and interchanges and urban interchanges we talk about, because there's serious implications of doing something like that. But if we really want to bring this county to the forefront and bring in the tourism and the people from everywhere else, we're going to have to do it. And that's not even going into talk about the inland port. I'd like to talk about even more on this. But the other thing I'd like to look at is on this is when we talk about bus routes, we're potentially building a Loxahatchee Grove Palm Beach State College, and that's starting to grow. I'd like to put maybe a potential bus route or something and a stop at that. You know, if we want to try and get our youth to start utilizing our bus routes, start thinking about it ahead of time, because we're going to try and, as that's located, we're going to bring it from the east and the west and put them in the middle, whether they're bringing Glade students in or West Palm Beach students to that Loxahatchee Groves campus. I'd like to start looking at something about putting some kind of bus stop there or a route to that area. And again, this isn't tomorrow. The campus isn't being built, but they're trying. And all those things in place ahead of time will certainly enhance the viability of utilizing that campus.
Absolutely. Commissioner Materio and then Commissioner Velshey.
Thank you. I'd like to ask, in the future when you do this map, where the dotted lines are currently, which gives us the blow up of a couple of different areas, can you enlarge where the Port of Palm Beach is so that we can see the direct connections? Because I agree with Commissioner Will Height, and especially when you consider All Aboard Florida's station in West Palm Beach, that adds an additional component of riders that are going to be coming from Orlando and or Miami and or Fort Lauderdale. And, you know, hopefully the idea is that while we hope to capture a lot of them to stay in West Palm Beach, they could easily be going to the port from that location. And I'd like to be able to see that connection better. And right now it's just beyond the dotted line. And the only thing I can see, I really appreciate these coastal link stations, and I think they're going to be really important and crucial to the future. But the only thing that I can see as a direct link to the port is that small little proposed Palm Tram bus facility expansion that comes off the coastal link, and it doesn't look like there's enough of anything else.
Thank you. Commissioner Velshey.
Thank you. I just want to make an observation. I think that our interconnectivity to the airports and to the port is a work in progress, and I don't think we should be beating ourselves up about it. I grew up in New York City, and I spent a lot of time working there. It's impossible to take public transport to LaGuardia or Kennedy. Newark is better. Mm-hmm. You can't get, you know, there's ships along the west side of Manhattan. There's no public transit there. Everybody takes a cab. So, you know, in the biggest city in the world, people are still having problems getting around to, you know, intermodal facilities using public transport. So I don't think we should be that critical of what we're doing here. It's a global problem.
Madam Chair.
Okay, good point. Commissioner Harrison, Deputy Mayor Scott, and then
I want to follow up on all the comments. I agree, Commissioner Velshey. It is a work in progress, but we are working on that, and it all ties, as far as Palm Tran goes, into getting the choice riders, the folks who don't have to ride public transportation but choose to, and part of the issue, a big part of the issue is funding, because we can always find funding for capital, but funding for operations is really critical. So as we're looking at different funding sources, we need to remember that, especially if we're focusing on tourists. There might be some funding. There might be some private funding. I mean, I think we need to just expand the way we think about operation funding, because the fares aren't going to cover it.
Yeah. Great. Deputy Mayor Scott.
I'd just like to comment. One of the things that I think the city of Boca Raton has been very successful at is our public-private partnerships. And I think that this is an opportunity for us to look at, you know, partnering with the cruise ship industry and partnering with the hotels that people fly in. They spend two nights in West Palm before they disembark and go on a cruise, and partnering with their shuttle services, which can be very, very successful in terms of making it easier for people to go from the airport to a hotel or to the actual port where they're going to be leaving from. And it's very important for us to keep in mind that our public dollars are just one component of it, and the relationships that we build with private industry, which also makes a considerable amount of money from having those tourists and residents present, that's what we need to focus on, too, are building those relationships.
Excellent point. Commissioner Opel.
I'm delighted to have this discussion about the Port of Palm Beach's area, which obviously includes my neighbor, Riviera Beach, and their major capital program as well, which is side by side. The biggest thing about the port right now is, no, we do not have any connectivity. We license about 10 cab companies, because right now we're producing somewhere around 375,000 cruise passengers a year. We're projecting that to go within the next 3 years to 650,000. We're projected to plan. We have to build a garage because there's just no more space for all the cars that are coming, because, as Nick said, that's the only way to get there. And this is a 25-year plan to look at where we'll be in 25 years without bringing this type of conversation up and deciding we need to start implementing something sooner rather than later. You're looking at the Rybovich, which is down the street on 45th Street, with a major yachting center, looking to become a global yachting center. So you're really looking at a destination point now that is critically in need of ways to get to it and be able to get from it without impacting public transportation per se. It needs to be really part of a major look now because of what's happened just in the last 24 months.
Excellent. And let's hope you can get your dredging project. That's another issue, too.
Mayor Palm Beach to come meet with her to see if we can work it out.
Good, good. Great, great, great discussion. Any further discussion on this, the transit portion of the long-range plan? Nope. Arturo? Bill?
I guess I'd just like to add briefly on the airport station. We do agree it's important to have an airport station. And for those of you who know the history of Tri-Rail, there was originally a station there at the airport that was removed when the direct connections were put in. We have studied, like we did the Boca Raton location, kind of a high-level planning study. We kind of know where we could fit a station to directly serve the airport. We have included that in our transportation plan, and we are certainly pleased to see it showing up here on your plan. We look forward to working with you to construct that station in the future.
Okay, great. I have cards on this item, actually. Jay Foy, I have two cards from you. Does that mean you want to speak to me? Welcome. Come forward. You have 3 minutes.
So which one would you like first?
They both say 2D, so.
Yes, one, I represent the town of Haverhill. I'm the mayor of Haverhill. I've been on council since 1992, but for 1 year. We have put in writing and we are objecting to the sixth laning of Belvedere Road. We have a neighborhood plan, which is very unusual. We have an adopted neighborhood plan, which our attorney and staff and we believe protects us with certain rights as to what could happen on Belvedere Road. This is Belvedere between Military and Jog. We have entered into a legal process, conflict resolution. And we are following the legal processes to try to ensure this road does not happen. It has never been shown, I don't know if you even currently do the cost feasible, but it's not on cost feasible. It wasn't when you did it the last time. It's not cost feasible. It goes through a residential area. We're less than a square mile, but more than half of us have access to Belvedere Road. We have adopted a 30-mile-an-hour speed limit. It does cut down on the traffic. And we have formally entered into a process to object. We don't like seeing the section shown as six lanes.
Okay, thank
that's
you.
That's it for Haverhill.
Thank you, Mayor. Now you're going to be a consultant.
Now I can go to Indian Trail?
Yes.
I am the district engineer for Indian Trail Improvement District, Hyatt, and who used to be the district administrator. I have been either second in charge or the district engineer since 1991, but for 2008 to 2013. We had a meeting last night that was concerning all future developments out west, and the effect is on transportation. George told you a couple numbers earlier, George Webb. He said that there's 8,000 more units planned, but he also said that that was with the existing approvals. That doesn't mean that's what's being asked for. It's being pushed to the 20,000 unit level. So I just want to put that in perspective. On your map, you show a couple things. We had a meeting. There were seven items that our board said to go forward on last night. One is a resolution, which will be forwarded to you, saying we need to get together as communities, including West Palm Beach, to make sure that the transportation plan does meet the needs. There are a couple things on here that are very encouraging. The extension of State Road 7, and I know your city has opposed it, but it needs to go through. Another interesting showing is that the Seminole Pratt Whitney Road goes through. Well, it isn't going to go where it's shown. And the current possibility is Mecca was sold to South Florida, but the county has the potential of buying back the south and east alignment so that State Road 7 could go there. But you have to take action before South Florida starts its design. There's no certainty that that Seminole is going to go through. You have to buy the land. The county has to buy the land back. So we're very concerned that that goes through. It has to go through. And the last item I'll bring to your attention is that our roads, Indian Trail roads, are easements. They belong to the people. Indian Trail Improvement District has drainage and roadway rights over top of them. On this map, there shows a matrix of Indian Trail easements as county existing roads. One of the action items was to come to the MPO, and you'll receive this in writing, it just happened last night, and request that you remove all easement roads off of these maps to go through the eminent domain processes to take it from each and every single family homeowner that owns half of the road. It's just not reasonable to assume that you can use those roads. In fact, another one of the action items last night was to investigate the possibility of turning Indian Trail, which was a land sales, into more of a community where you have entry points and you isolate a neighborhood. I don't know where that one's going to go, but we are going to look at it. So the basic point of being here representing Indian Trail is the easement roads are not county roads. They're not right-of-ways. They need to come off of this map. And thank you for your
time. Thank you very much. We appreciate your comments. Chris Marsh. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Chris Marsh. I'm the village engineer for the Village of Royal Palm Beach and speaking up on their behalf. Our concern with the plan is that the removal of the urban interchanges on Okeechobee Boulevard. Okeechobee is the one of the major thoroughfares for residents to get to work. The removal of the overpasses will ultimately reduce capacity on the roadway. The county is currently considering significant western development, which will have greater impacts on Okeechobee's capacity. and other east-west thoroughfares are projected to be at or above capacity. So for that reason, Royal Palm Beach objects the removal of overpasses without other capacity enhancement alternatives.
Great. Thank you very much for your comments. All right. That concludes the cards that I have. So,
is George Webb still on the premises?
He's not, Commissioner. He sent me a note that he had to leave for another meeting.
I don't know if anybody in this room has any information of the status of the transit project on the station at Tamarind Avenue here, because that, of course, has a great impact on the traffic system in for West Palm Beach and the downtown area. So is there any update on it?
Commissioner, I'm not sure which station you're referring to.
The transit development, the $300 million transit development project.
TOD.
The TOD project.
Within Clear Lake, the wedge parcel.
Yes, right. Yes.
But
do you have any update? The reason I thought about it this morning is when I read what's going on with the developer, Masanoff. He's pleaded guilty to taking $100,000 kickback. So it might have some effect on that project. Do you know anything about it? Does anybody know anything about the status of the development?
Commissioner James, do you want to speak to the permit activity or anything that's come before the city?
Well, nothing's come before the city formally. As I understand, they've been meeting with staff, going through plans, et cetera. But it's still in the permitting process. But nothing has been presented to the commission as well as the staff level.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll get an update. Why don't we get an update on that next month about that? So, okay. So we further discussion. Commissioner Burdick.
Okeechobee Boulevard. We did take those flyovers out for a variety of different reasons. But how can we look at moving people if it's not cost feasible to add another one of those special use lanes? What are our other? Could you look at what our other options are? Look at designating high occupancy, look at special use during certain times of the day for express buses, because it's a concern for the Western communities, and we respect that. It's unsafe for the bicycle riders who use that road, and we need to look at some solutions for it. And then secondly, to go to Mr. Foy's, how could we remove that 4 to 6 lanes out of the community, because it would drastically change the character of that neighborhood?
Okay. Good point, Yana.
So do we need a motion to take that out at this point in time?
I think you could
draft or
put forward a motion to endorse this plan without particular projects, and that would be fine.
Okay. Are we ready for a motion?
Yes, I believe we are. Oh, excuse me, Mayor Petriello.
We keep talking about a lot of the same projects. So, you know, each week we talk about it in the Western communities, what we want, what we don't want. We don't want the flyovers on Northwick. We do want this. We know we have traffic problems. Each time I come here, and I know that we all speak from our own unique places of where we're at. But again, in the short term and the long-range plans and what is planned already and what is desired, the Eastern communities, especially Broadway and Dixie Highway, are really neglected in these short-term and long-range plans as people start to move and that traffic starts to move to the coastal communities. I don't think that we're preparing for it. We're doing a couple of things. I sort of feel, you know, I'll represent myself, not just the city of Lake Worth, but the city of Atlantis and Palm Springs and Green Acres. The center portion of the county, or south central, or whatever way you want to look at it, is often neglected as in a lot of these projects. And we're not looking at the growth and the things that are happening in those communities. They've also, several areas of those roadways have been neglected for a long time. And maybe they don't have the traffic patterns of, say, in Okeechobee Boulevard, but there still is a lot of wear and tear and a lot of problems. You saw in the Palm Beach Post yesterday when they were talking about infrastructure and funding for infrastructure and all of those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Dixie Highway is our responsibility to look at that. And mm-hmm. it's long neglected. It's blighted. and there are, you know, issues in the eastern communities that really are not being addressed, I feel personally, by these long-range plans. And I think we really have to take a good hard look at it, especially, and I say this not to ingratiate myself with the board, but to say, hey, listen, you don't want those things. If these priorities are changing, please, let's take this into account, because we know Delray, Boca, Lake Worth, you know, Jupiter, you know, other areas, we need this help. And Riviera Beach, you know, Broadway-Dixie corridor is in trouble. And we need to do something about it. Just wanted to put that on the record.
Okay, great, great. Thanks. All right, so at this time, if there's no further discussion, we will entertain a motion to endorse. And I believe Commissioner Burdick would like to make that less the Belvedere Road improvements.
Correct. And last month, Mayor Triola, Commissioner Materio had your same comments from Lantana all the way up through Riviera Beach for staff to
exactly. Thank you.
Consider.
Okay. All right, so we have a motion on the floor and a second.
Point of information. Does that include Nick was talking about the North Lake B-line. Is that also not part of this?
That is not part of this plan.
So this is being – that we're not making a decision or a recommendation one way or another on that interchange.
Correct.
Okay,
so we have a motion by Commissioner Burdick. It's amended to remove Belvedere Road widening, seconded by Councilmember Wilhite.
Just one question, please.
Yes.
Is it the entire Belvedere Road widening, or was it? I thought it was from a particular intersection.
From military
too.
To jog.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, so I just want to make that clear.
Yes. Okay, so it's military to jog. Is that?
Yes. And that's the only portion of Belvedere Road that's identified for widening.
Oh, okay. So it is the entire widening.
Removing that entire widening corriddor from jog to military.
Right, because that's all that's demonstrated or depicted on the
Thank
the map.
Thank you. I just didn't understand that. Okay.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Further discussion? All those in favor state so by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Nay. Okay, let the record reflect that Commissioner James is voting in the negative. Okay, great, everybody. Good discussion. Now we're going to move on to our information items, which we're going to hopefully zoom through quickly. Nick?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to introduce Arturo to you again. First, he's going to present to you a summary of the survey responses, our public outreach efforts as part of this long-range plan, and an aggregate of the input that we've received from that process. And then I think to Mayor Tiriolo's point and some of the questions that we've highlighted with respect to how do we emphasize the eastern portions of Palm Beach County and what types of mobility investments are appropriate, Arturo is going to point out the development of our cost-feasible plan and focus your attention a little bit more again on this concept of project category funding. And if I use Dixie Highway as an illustration, the question is, what investment is appropriate for Dixie Highway? As part of a long-range plan, we have traditionally identified major capacity widening projects. We don't want to widen Dixie Highway. What we may choose to do is reinvigorate the corridor by introducing elements that are not present or not sufficiently present, such as wide sidewalks and safer bicycle facilities that would introduce a level of non-motorized traffic to the corridor that would be more business and resident friendly. There's not really a good way to show that on a countywide map, but the concept of this project funding category enables us to say through the MPO's work with you as local communities, this is what we desire as an improvement to the corridor, and then we can go and build that improvement, that kind of rebuild of the existing right-of-way to promote mobility in our eastern communities. So I really struggle with how to show that in a long-range plan, but it's definitely we're asking you to support a plan that allows us to do that kind of project as we go forward as an MPO. So I just wanted to make that point clear.
Thank you.
Arturo.
Okay, thank you. This is an overview of the survey that we have been conducting through the project website and also through the MPO's website. You have access to the same survey, and it's still going to be up there for not only the duration of the plan, but it will continue to be up there to gather information from the public just to see what people would like to see. But all of the results are included in your packet. I'm just going to show you a couple of responses. And this one here basically states that of all the people who took the survey, and there were so far 531 surveys that we collected, 76% of the people that answered the survey had to maintain the existing system as one of their top five priorities. 61% had that they would like to see PalmTran expanded. Over 50% would like to see Tri-Rail extended to the north to Jupiter. And about 20% would like to see the airport facilities improved. That means that, like I said, that at least 20% of the people had that as one of their top five priorities. In terms of what would we could do to improve transit usage, and if you look at the responses, they would be very likely to improve their usage if we have additional service, the more frequent service. 220 of the 531 had that as a response. And then if you have better access to key destinations, over 260 responded to that, that they would be very likely to utilize transit if that were to happen. Something related to bicycle and pedestrian improvements that we could do to increase the usage of those, and obviously adding more facilities, that would almost half the people that responded would they say that they would increase their use of bicycle and pedestrian facilities, and then safer facilities. That was the highest response was to get safer facilities, and you talked about that in the bridge project, separation from regular traffic. That was a key concern. Now we know that the gas tax that we're collecting is not providing enough funding to do the transportation improvements that we desire. So we asked, what would we you willing to accept as a way of taxing yourself? And 35% of the people were willing to increase the rate of the gas tax. But we know that, vehicles are getting more and more efficient. We're going to hybrid, so gas tax is not something that can really help us out into the future. More tolls or user fees, over 30% said that they would be willing to do that. Implement a mileage vehicle fees, such as VM vehicle mile travel. So instead of paying for the gas that you utilize, you actually pay for the number of miles that you drive. That had over 30% saying that they would be willing to pay for that. And then probably about 25% said that they'd be willing to pay for ad valorem tax. Osceola County near Orlando is doing something like that right now. Okay, so onto the cost feasible plan development. We looked at the desires, and we now know what we're going towards, but now we have to be realistic and see how much money we have to actually spend on the project so that we can develop a cost feasible plan. And you have two types of funding commitments. You have the project specific ones that we show on the map, and they cost well over $5 million. And then you have this categorical fund that we're going to implement now, where TSM, some transit projects, and non-motorized projects that are less than $5 million are going to compete for on an annual basis. I understand that it's probably impossible to read this table, but you do have it in your packet. And what we're trying to show here is what are the funds that are available to us, which ones the MPO actually has some control over. The SIS facilities and the turnpike facilities, which right now, we're showing over $1 billion for high SIS and $420 million for turnpike facilities. Those, the MPO may not accept the improvements that they're recommending, but then you wouldn't have any control over the funds that those projects would not require any longer. Then the area that is shaded in the light blue are the funds that the MPO does have control over, and that's about a $1.5 billion. You have, you know, state, federal, and then the TMA or SU funds is about $358 million. And those funds are the ones that we're putting set aside for those categorical funding processes that we're going to implement to do TSM, transit capital, and non-motorized and freight improvements. And then there's $35 million that are for transportation alternatives such as bike and pedestrian facilities, and those are going to go to the non-motorized modes. I think one thing that we wanted to also mention is that for Tri-Rail, this is what is available through the year 2040, but by July 2019, we have $30.1 million that will stop unless we do something to maintain the funding. So that's something that we have to work with the DOT on. I don't know if you wanted anything else mentioned, Nick?
No. I don't think so. Anything else you missed?
I had a question.
Yes, Commissioner Valchek.
You know, I noticed in your discussion or your survey results concerning funding of, you know, how we're going to fund this, that the most anything ever got was 30%. So it seems like people are not really that anxious to pay for any of these improvements that we're talking about. What was the response of the other 70% was the response, we don't want to pay for this?
They didn't have a selection.
Uh-huh.
Only these actually received, because you had multiple choices. Mm-hmm. One of them was not to pay for any of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're getting a mandate from the public in terms of you know, how we're going to go about this, right?
Okay. Any further questions? Okay. Thanks, Arturo. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, Nick. Now we're to the first reading of the TIP.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We've talked about already this morning, the TIP is the five-year work program for this organization. It tells the Department of Transportation which projects we want to spend money on and what they're supposed to go forth and build. As a reminder to you, as far as how the calendar plays out, we adopt priorities in September, and we give those priorities to the department and say, put money on these projects. And then in December, the department comes back to us with what they call the draft tentative work program. That was the meeting we had out at Vista Center where they presented to the board what they were able to program as far as our priorities and what other projects they were introducing that accomplished their goals and priorities. All of the projects in this document are supposed to be consistent with our long-range transportation plan. So that's why the update we're performing right now is so important, because the things that we decide to include in that plan are the projects that we then get to work on in the five-year increments addressed by the TIP. So I say all that as background to say this document in front of you this morning is substantially similar to the draft work program that was approved by the MPO in December. I have, as part of the executive summary, I have worked with our staff to provide you with a list of projects that are changing from last year's TIP to this year's TIP. New projects that are coming in, projects that are being removed, as well as an explanation for those removals, and then projects that are changing significantly. And the only item I want to really draw your attention to regarding projects that are changing significantly is that we are seeking to get a better handle on all of the transportation investments being made countywide by the county, by the cities, as well as by the state DOT through federal and state revenue sources. So previously, we have shown the county's road program as an appendix to this document instead of including those projects in the body of the document. Most MPOs in Florida, as well as in other parts of the country, would show all investments being made in the body of their document. We have made that change this time with the TIP in front of you, so it includes the county's projects as well. They're informational. You know, choosing, if you don't like a county-funded project, if you choose to take it out of the TIP, that won't stop the project from happening. But it gives the public a one-stop shop kind of a place to refer to see all of the transportation investments. We're working with the other cities and entities that construct transportation projects throughout the county to get their list of projects also included in the TIP, and that'll be part of the version presented to you in June. This is informational, but if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them because it will be presented to you for adoption in June.
Any questions? Yes, Commissioner Burdick.
These are all improvements. Where are the maintenance dollars? I mean, we're doing a lot of 95 interchange improvements, and I agree we need to get the people off of the highway and not stacked up. But 95 is full of potholes, and it's many of our other roads are in need of resurfacing. So where's that pot of money, or do we ever access or set, you know, maybe this maybe maintaining the roads is just as important as some of these improvements?
The maintenance expenses associated with operating our system are also part of this document.
Okay.
And if you look at, I guess it's page 4 of the TIP, so I'm on page 167 of the backup material, that gives you a summary of how we are investing all of the different revenue sources in categories, transportation project categories.
This is under the executive summary?
Correct.
Okay.
And the maintenance component of that summary is the $225 million that we're spending just to repave, resurface, and operate our existing facilities. That's roughly 13.5% of our overall investment in the system over the next 5 years.
How far does that get us?
That's a tricky question. I think it gets us, it allows the Department of Transportation to maintain the system they're responsible for, consistent with their policies for pavement quality, status of good repair for bridges, et cetera. That's an area that I don't have direct responsibility to be familiar with, so I'm not as good at answering that question. But that's the general sense.
And that's for like 95 and all of the state-owned roads within Palm Beach County?
Yes, but we're working on adding both the state and the county's investment in maintenance of county facilities into this document so that we can identify both what we're spending and where the shortfalls are in case the county would like to come forward and say, boy, we just can't afford to maintain our system. Can the MPO help? Which is, you know, the answer is yes, we have the ability. But as we all have recognized this morning, if you choose to spend money on one thing, you have less money to spend on something else. So it's a question of priorities.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Councilmember Wilhite, then Deputy Mayor Scott.
I'm so excited you bring up maintenance because that's one of the questions we've had as of recently on a recent proposal by a private entity to bring in additional waste into our county. And, you know, it's not the fact of lowering the rate to an outside of our county residents. It's the fact that, you know, that potential maintenance and the impact on our roadways, because we talk about Palm Beach County, and, you know, we talk about region, but we're talking about Palm Beach County dollars, and we're talking about maintenance of it. That's my concern, is now we start bringing additional trips, and that has no benefit or bearing on how we benefit from it as a county or as an MPO to maintain those roads if there is additional impacts on them. And so, you know, I'm excited to hear that we can talk about maintenance, but it goes to a bigger picture that we offer in this, the Solid Waste Authority is offering us to bring in this at a reduced rate for outside of the county to help. They have the ability internal to Palm Beach County to lower some of their rates and use capacity. They just haven't explored all of those, and I'm glad to hear that they're finally talking to Wellington about an issue with manure usage that we've had for years had that ability to do. But, you know, that maintenance issue becomes an issue to all of us when we talk about these roads. We can all talk about building them and using them, but somebody has to pay to maintain them too. So I'd like to have a better description and a more detailed description of what maintenance and how far it gets us and how far it goes, because, you know, it's the cost of material and how much it costs to do it and the work and how far, you know, those dollars will go to the maintenance of the roadway facilities we have, let alone future roadways. Thank you.
Thank you. Deputy Mayor Scott.
I always seem to focus toward economic engines, and I'm looking down at the item on Port of Palm Beach Berth 1 expansion, and I'm sure that Mr. Opel has noticed that is a $6 million project for 2019. Is it possible that should the demand or the priority for the Port of Palm Beach due to the economic engine that that's going to be presenting over the next couple of years, can those items be moved up, Nick, in terms of prioritization should the opportunity arise and the demand and necessity be there?
Boy, the answer to that is maybe. Maybe I'll defer to Commissioner Opal on how to accelerate the funding.
No, you're not ready. Okay.
We're definitely not ready. We're finishing up our subgrade. Appreciate this.
He needs to speak.
We're finishing up our slip three.
I'm sorry. We're finishing up our slip three project, which will be completed by the end of next year, which is dealing with our sugar exportation, things like that. We do have some real great opportunities to create a whole new center, which will include a new yachting area, which will be tied into Rybovich and everything else. So we have already initiated the beginning of the planning, but we're not near to be able to discuss whether or not we have to go forward with an acceleration yet. But I do appreciate you bringing that up.
Okay, that's a good point. Okay, any further discussions on the TIP? Yeah. Yes, Commissioner Burdick.
To go along with Councilman Wilhite, can we bring the impacts, possible impacts for solid waste and the road maintenance budgets, looking at, I mean, there are several pieces in here, perhaps at our next meeting, because the Solid Waste Authority at our meeting in June may move forward with going out for an RFP to explore the interest. And it'll take a couple months, which will give the MPO time to look at the possible impacts and how we're going to address some of these very important issues before us. And then maybe we want to weigh in on whether the Solid Waste Authority should move forward.
Okay. Councilmember Wilhite.
I'm sorry, I just had another question on this. I look at the proposed additions, and one reference is the first one. It's commercial, Gulfview commercial property acquisition by the airport. Is that them purchasing more property around the airport? Is it?
Yeah.
I guess I ask that because it seems like they're buying a lot of property, but what's the plan for the airport? I mean, what's the overall plan? I mean, we've talked about runway extensions. We just talked today about transportation in and out of it. What's the use of buying all the property if we're never really going to increase the usage of the airport?
True. And, you know, we should probably, and you know, have the airport come present to us. I mean, we show them in our plan, but, you know, they just provide us with their priorities. We really don't get too involved in that. But that's a very valid point, and to find out what the long-range plan of the airport is.
And that is something I've talked to the executive director about, too, is, you know, we have the port here because this body is made up of elected officials, but we don't reference rail and the airport in their sitting here and talking about things. But those are two of the largest things that impact this MPO as a board, because they're some of the largest users, you know, by the people that commute to them and stuff. So, but, you know, I mean, it's, you know, it's an additional $14 million for something that we have no idea what the airport's plan is or why we're trying to plan something for them if they're just spending money to buy property. What is their long-range plan for the airport?
Okay. Well, that's a very good point, and maybe we can have the airport director come address us in the near future. So,
okay,
further discussion on this item. Okay.
Approval.
Well, these are just informational. We don't even have a quorum left anymore. We realize what the limits of our attention are, right, Mr. Executive Director.
We can get a lot done right here.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, and the next bunch are pretty much just updates. Okay, item C is our Tiger Grant.
Madam Chair, I just got a note. Before we move to that, I wanted to respond to Vice Mayor Burke's question about the Flagler Memorial Bridge replacement project that will have bicycle and pedestrian facilities on both sides of the roadway, and those are going to be 8-foot wide facilities, both 8-foot for bicycles and 8-foot for pedestrians. The benefit there is when you're rebuilding an entire structure, you have a lot more flexibility in what you can accomplish. The US 1 project was a constrained rehabilitation of an existing structure, and that's why we fought so hard to fit even the narrow facilities onto that bridge.
Good report.
Okay, the Tiger Grant, I provided the grant application summary to you in the backup material. Just for your information, we were able to successfully submit the grant by the deadline. Now we're hoping to be successful in winning the money. I wanted to highlight, too, that we learned several things in our meetings with USDOT staff, as well as our conversations with Florida Department of Transportation staff in Tallahassee that and that influenced the way we submitted. So just so you're informed, first, we weren't able to count any passenger rail introduction in our application because it's not a given. All aboard Florida impacts could not be mitigated because they're asking for a federal rail infrastructure financing loan, and there's no guarantee that they'll get that money, and the project will has not committed to proceed without that money. So we can't count their impacts. So we had to focus on the freight traffic impacts only. Second, in order to make our application as likely to be successful as possible, we had to focus on safety value, not on quality of life value or benefit, because we needed to demonstrate a financially defensible benefit-cost ratio that was favorable for the project. What that means is the application we submitted asks for money to install as many gates as possible, I'm paraphrasing, as many gates as possible at each of those crossings to minimize the chance for a vehicle, a pedestrian, or a bicyclist to enter the corridor when a train is coming. It has a tremendous safety improvement benefit, and it would alleviate the chance for vehicles to enter the corridor and then get hit by a train, which leads to fatalities. So there's a numeric analysis that we could provide, and we did provide, showing a favorable benefit-cost ratio for that request. As an ancillary benefit of the application, if the local governments are able to ask for quiet zone designation, it's a bonus. But that's not the focal point of the application. The point I want to make is we think we have an application that's poised to win. We have a lot of great support from our legislative and congressional delegations. We have cooperation from the Florida Department of Transportation, and we are going to be looking for cooperation with some of our local partners should we be successful to be able to implement the project. So I just wanted everyone to understand what we did and why we did it.
And I will say the USDOT was very supportive when we went to Washington before we made the application. They were very encouraging to us. And we also, when we were in Tallahassee, met with the FDOT. And, yeah, it seems like the stars have aligned. And hopefully everybody's together on this. So,
when yes.
I think November, first week in November.
Has Congress determined how much money is going to be in the Tiger Grant pot?
Well, this particular notice of funding availability allows for $600 million as far as this round that we submitted for. If your question is how much will be available in future years, that's actually one of my last items for informational purposes.
And we've requested $20 million. So
right.
We'll see. But they could also award us a lesser amount and still give us something, in which case that would be a good problem to have as well. So, okay, item D.
Just an informational item again. I wanted to point out that the Florida legislative session did approve House Bill 7175 of particular interest to this MPO. It allows for MPOs to increase their voting membership from 19, which is the current statutory cap, to up to 25 members. So if the MPO board chooses to revisit how voting membership is established, they have the ability to go above 19. Should the bill become effective.
Okay. Item E.
This item is just letting you know that there are two extremes, if you will, regarding transportation reauthorization. One is the President and USDOT administration's proposal, what they're calling the Grow America Act, which seeks to create a four-year authorization bill largely similar to the policies in place under MAP 21, but with greater funding levels to implement those policies. I've highlighted for you in the summary some of those significant changes, one of them being that they would like to double the funding associated with the Tiger program on an annual basis from $600 million to $1.25 billion. They want to fund that shortfall, the increased funding, as well as the existing shortfall that you may have been hearing about within the Highway Trust Fund through a new revenue source, temporary revenue source created through corporate tax reform. By contrast, the more fiscally conservative side of the table is suggesting through the Transportation HUD and Related Agencies Bill, or THUD, that they would maintain only existing levels of funding for the various major programs, and they would significantly reduce Tiger funding from $600 million to $100 million, as well as requiring a 50% match for all new federal New Start's transit applications. Hmm. So the conversation is ongoing. Honestly, I get emails, 2 to 3 emails a day right now regarding summaries and changes, but I wanted you to be aware that that discussion is happening at the federal level.
Okay, stay tuned. Yes, Wendy.
Just a quick thing. The folks who spoke at public comment were talking about they were concerned with funding of transportation. We let them know and their organizations know because they have a pretty good network, grassroots network. And if we can let them know that here's an opportunity where they can influence legislation in terms of funding for maintenance and bridges, I mean, that's what they're concerned that the All Aboard is going to take away that funding. So.
Okay, that's a good point.
I think it would be helpful.
That is a good point. Of course, anything named FUD probably isn't going to... isn't that horrible? Oh, well. Okay, final item, Tri-Rail Coastal Link Project Development.
Closing the loop on this meeting as well as this item, the board approved in December the regional agencies, DOT and SFRTA, on behalf of our Southeast Florida region, to submit a request to the Federal Transit Administration for the Coastal Link Project to enter what's called project development. That means they begin formally, you know, so far we've been working informally, but they would begin formally working with the federal government to iron out the issues associated with our desired expansion of Tri-Rail and to ensure that the project is viable to go forward into design and then construction and operation. So that's a 2-year process. They just submitted that letter, and they have been working with FTA to iron out any issues as part of that request. They're hoping to formally start their clock on June 30th of 2014, which means that we need to finish project development and be clear on the path forward to go into design by June 30th of 2016.
Okay. Great. That's ambitious, but we'll see what happens. Okay, member comments? Yes.
I'd like to see if we can bring an agenda item back and some more discussion on and maybe ability to look at our bus stops. It keeps being a discussion of it, but, you know, again, you know, the advertising on them, the location of the usage. We're not going to get people to use bus stops if they're going to have to stand out in the rain or something, too. So I'd like to talk about bus stops. And then secondly, if you'd like to use our transportation system and those great roads that the MPO has approved to come out tonight to Wellington. I know everyone talked about having a Trader Joe's, but the first one's opening in Wellington tonight. So please come out to the first Trader Joe's.
All right, thank you. I rub it in. The roof's on ours. So
ours is opening tonight.
Okay, congratulations. Further member comments.
We're competing with you for number two.
I know. Well, whatever. We're all the winners on that one.
Yeah.
Our next meeting is June 19th, 2014, and from the looks of this crowd, it will be a shorter agenda. You all get kudos for staying with us till the end here. And
thank you.
With that, we are adjourned. Thank you all so much.
Eric, call me when you get him.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. All right, we'll talk. I'll